Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Route, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. We've got a pair of fabulous females here on a Friday. Fabulous Female Friday. It's got the same ring to it as Fabulous Female Thursday, don't you think? Bridget Napier is standing by. She's in Hawaii. She'll be with us in the first half of the journey. Second half of the journey is the daughter of an Air Force veteran, Kristen Hicks Roof, who is currently the director of human nutrition for the Pork Board. And we're going to talk about all things pork in a moment. But in the first segment, today is beef. And we will continue to focus, on our food infrastructure, because whether you want to recognize it or not, it is in peril. It's at risk. People trying to shut it down. This high path avian influenza scenario in the dairy cows is fluid, and I'm working on it by the minute just to try to give a baseline on what really is going on. All right. How do you, are you content with being a fabulous female, Bridget?
Of course not. But hey, we'll take it.
Doesn't matter what it is, it sounds good, so I'm going to take it.
Exactly. We need more of those.
We do need more of those. Each week, I like to feature a fabulous female on Thursday. And a fabulous female is someone who goes outside of their comfort zone to do something that makes a difference. You're obviously doing that. Now, most people didn't give two thoughts. I said that correctly because I could have gotten in trouble with how I said that. Didn't give two thoughts to when pineapples left Hawaii. Suddenly, now we see cows being chased off of the Hawaiian Islands. And I'm saying this is not just some little deal. This is another nick in the armor of the people who are trying to ruin the infrastructure of what we have for our food system. Bridget, you made some news this week in Hawaii because there's a group of cows that are leaving or going to leave the Hawaiian Islands, and the property is going into development. Tell us what's this about.
So the ranch was under previous ownership of North Shore Cattle Company, and it got taken over by Maokele some years back. We have currently 500, give or take, like 10 or so more or less cattle on the property currently, all pregnant, all in gestation or in lactation periods. We were recently approached and stated that they wanted to terminate our lease, and when asked to allow us extension to see out gestation and lactation period so we can ensure that they go to an appropriate market and we not lose what we've put in investment in our herd, we basically got denied. Our next step was telling them, like, it's an impossibility to perform this. We're going to have to harvest animals that are pregnant, and that is not what we want to do. We're not going to get the full cost of what, you know, we should for our cow-calf crop. There's not enough land here for us to just pick up and move to and start all over at. Please work with us. And they've basically said no. It's fallen on deaf ears since March 1st till now. I've tried to work with them. I've provided them personally, myself, my name to take over the lease and say, hey, I will give you letters of recommendation from everybody that I know in the industry, and provided that, and they've still said no. So at this point, we've been going through and spending every couple weekends when we have time to gather a bunch of people together and process 100 to 200 head, brand, castrate, you know, whatever dried out cows are given birth and I can wean, that they're going to harvest facilities. But it puts us in a difficult position because we are the currently registered largest beef livestock grower on Oahu, on this island. We have 500 head of our own cattle here. And to see that disappear, I mean, this island's already a concrete jungle. And if we keep going down this route, in one hurricane, our food source is going to be wiped out in 2 weeks. We have nothing to be able to sustain on locally because we keep losing ag lands to developers. And when asked, what are you developing? What's coming? They say, oh, it's another agricultural development. What does that mean? This same company purchased the bottom 1,400 acres that is below our ranch currently. And that's already been kind of divided into 1 to 5 acre parcels and sold off. If you drive down by the road, you'll see barn dominiums being built. Some people are valid. They have horses, horses mainly, nothing else. You don't see cattle because at 5 acres, what you got? Two head, three head? Mm-hmm. You're not going to pay that for that.
Right. Yeah,
So
absolutely.
you'll see that. You have a few doing plumeria farms, plumeria trees or crops. But other than that, most of it, you see barn dominiums or houses or a structure being built. So it's going to be sad because I can tell you, as you can see in those videos, the views are amazing. And it is like solitude when you go up there. You can just completely separate yourself from the real world and get away and enjoy the lifestyle that I grew up in. I'm fourth generation rancher. And in my time on earth, and it's only been 40 years, it has changed so much. And I'm scared to see what it's going to be for my nieces and nephews when they get my age. Is there going to be anything left of what we knew when we were kids?
So, Bridget, I don't feel like your host did a very good job setting up how we got to this point, although you did a great job explaining where we're at now. So you are leasing, and you in this case would be Hawaii Meats?
No, me in this case would be Mount Kelly Ranch. I work
Mount
for
Kelly
Hawaii
Ranch.
Meats.
Okay,
Mount Kelly
so
Ranch.
Mount Kelly Ranch leases this property, has been running 500 cows, gave or took 10 or
About
14.
30 years.
And I'm not the banker, so it could be 10 or 14, not 50 or 60. Mm-hmm. That would be a different deal because I know how that math works. But anyway, so Mount Kelly Ranch is leasing the property, running cows, mm-hmm. and now some developer, I believe from maybe Idaho,
Utah, is coming
in, has offered to purchase this. You're losing your lease probably without the proper amount of notification and being told mm-hmm. to get these cows somewhere else.
Yes. Yes. And when approached to continue the lease, because they have approached other ranches to, take over the lease. And I've said, well, my infrastructure leaves with us. We take our fences, we take our corrals, we take everything. That's how our lease is written. What we put money into, we take with us. So for another rancher to come in, they'd have to build that infrastructure back up. How long is their lease going to be? Why not continue to lease to me? Why can't we do this? And we were told that development was going to take place on the land that we sit on first. And that's why they couldn't. So we offered to buy the land. I asked, what is the price? They asked, how many acres do I need? I said, well, I'll be honest. I can step back to 1,000 acres. What would my cost be for 1,000 acres? They provided me a map to draw out where I wanted. And I drew that out. That next afternoon, they sent me back an email with a new map drawn out saying, this is what's available. And well, my question was, well, if you knew what was available, why didn't you just give me that map instead of me going through the process of drawing out what I wanted? You know, you're kind of, so.
Let me guess why. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bridget. I know better than mom told me don't interrupt the lady, but I'm guessing you know this property better than anybody else on the planet. They wanted you to tell them what they wanted so that they knew where the good property was and they could adjust accordingly.
Correct. Correct. And I probably gave them way too much information on it.
Yeah, you did.
You know,
I just met you 10 minutes ago. You gave them way too much information.
Yeah. And I'm trying to perpetuate what I've grown up and the heritage and the lifestyle in which we have and try to explain our ranching operation where we're in a perfect environment up there. We have two sides of the road, and basically there's a road that goes down the middle of it. Top side of the road will constantly get rain every night, and the bottom side of the road, for whatever reason, at the road, it'll shift and go around, and it won't rain as much. So we get the best of the both worlds at the ranch. And here I am explaining all of this. So, of course, they cut out the whole bottom side of the ranch, and I'm just like, well, that's stupid. you shouldn't have said that. But, you know, you're entrusting people thinking that they have your best interests at heart, and they really ultimately don't. And when he came back to me, he drew out the acreage that was available, and it was probably 60, maybe 70% of what we currently lease. And the problem was, it was our corrals all the way down, which was basically our biggest investment was that corral.
Sure.
And I said, well, okay, if that's not available, can I at least get to the pasture just below the corral? What can I do to negotiate that? Why is that not available? I'm confused. You're the whole landowner. Why would this not be available according to your development plan? And he says, well, that's a different landowner. I was like, what? So it didn't make sense to me, but he basically came back and told me, sure, we'll sell it to you at $55,000 an acre. And I said, wait a minute, what? So I'm going to give you $55 million for 1,000 acres. And he says, yeah. And I was like, well, that's insane. Like, I can't afford that as a ranching operation.
Well, I've been in the cattle business pretty much my whole life. And if you can make that work in Hawaii on that cost per animal unit, I'm guessing there'll be a lot of competition there, Bridget, because that's pretty spendy.
Yep. So his answer to me was basically, well, if you're not going to pay for that, that's fine, because I will have someone who will. And that's true. It's people who want 1 to 20 acre parcels to grow their little barn dominium and have something to show their friends. Of course you're going to get it.
Bridget, we've got to go to a break. It's a roll route on a Red Shirt Friday saying thank you to all of the troops. Steaks4Troops.com, the Old American Beef Battalion, continuing to go to places like Fort Carson to say thank you. We're back with more Bridget Napier after this. Welcome back, Red Shirt Friday Rural Route. I'm Trent Luce. Let's get right back to our conversation here. Bridget Napier joining us from Hawaii. You're 5 hours. You learn what happens. Yep. That's interesting because I do a TV show every morning with Andrew Henderson in the UK. He's 6 hours ahead of me. I'm 5 hours ahead of you. So I'm like, right, I'm the middleman.
Yeah.
I feel trapped. So who's Hawaii Meats?
Hawaii Meats is who I work for. We are the only harvest and processing, I shouldn't say only processing, we're the only harvest facility located on Oahu. So we harvest all local animals and process local animals for food service and for retail markets. So I am the plant manager for that operation. Third generation in that, fourth generation in the ranching industry.
And so I don't take lightly what you said earlier, Bridget, and that is that if this happens to go down, going down, meaning the supply of these local animals, the folks on the island, and I'm assuming greater Hawaii, are at risk of not having a local food supply, period.
Currently, if I'm not mistaken, based on the last studies that they discussed on the news, we currently only have enough food to supply us for 2 weeks if we were to hit a natural disaster. Now, I think that's just based on what we have residency, not including what we have tourism that comes through. So if something were to happen where they couldn't shut down tourism fast enough to, you know, basically control the environment of what we have and who we have to feed, we would only have 2 weeks of food supply. During COVID, when we got shut down in Hawaii, my plant that I work for, granted, I wasn't here employed at the time, but I do know that this is fact because I was involved in the cattleman's industry. They were able to continue to process local beef and supply food. But if they take away ranches or land for ranches to exist on, you're taking away another level of the food source. And that's been a constant issue that we've been facing. And it's difficult because I think this is a part generational issue. My generation, millennials, ran away from doing anything related to agriculture, livestock egg production, because we were always taught there's no money in it. Don't do what we did. Don't this, don't that. Well, now we're getting into the phase where baby boomers are passing on. And then the family doesn't have anybody that wants to inherit the business. Fortunately for me, it's not that I don't want to inherit it. It's, you know, my parents got rid of what they had because they didn't want the kids to have that burden. But we're seeing where it's very important that it's vital. We need this. We need this type of thing. So we're stepping up and going out and helping others. Joining associations like myself, I'm also Oahu Cattlemen Council's president, and trying to band together our industry to say, hey, somebody's here for you. There is a voice. We need to speak up, and doing it and getting people my age and younger involved at a school level to say, you need to grow your food. You need to understand where your food sources are. And you don't walk into the supermarket and your meat just grows on a petri dish and that's what you pick up and it's perfect every time. No. There's a process that goes into this. So that's kind of where we're at here in Hawaii. And I'm scared for what there is if we do have a natural disaster. And we're getting close to hurricane season. We'll hit hurricane season come July 1st.
You know that there are a select group of people that want us to grow our food in a petri dish. And then we're subject to knows what.
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned that you are the president of the Oahu Cattlemen's Association.
Yes.
How many members do you have?
Currently, we have 52 members on this island, and that has actually increased this year. We were consistently having about, I'd say, 35 to 40. And since I have been elected president, I've been pushing hard to get more people who felt like they didn't have a voice. Well, why should I join Oahu Cattlemen's Association or Hawaii Cattlemen's Council? And I've spoken with them of like, why don't you want to? What are the issues that you see of not joining an industry like us? Well, I don't feel like I have a voice, or I have 100 head. I don't have enough skin in the game. One skin is skin in the game. It doesn't matter. If you have the true intent of wanting to see livestock egg production flourish, you have skin in the game. We need more people that are willing to speak up and say, hey, this is what we need. This is how we need it. I'm willing to help. Not just sit back and point out what the issues are, but actually speak on it and educate everybody around them.
I don't believe, Bridget, you need my help in any way, shape, or form, but I would modify that just a little bit. And I would say, if you eat, you have skin in the game.
Yeah. Sure. Sorry.
So I think that most people stateside, I think I can say that right, stateside, would be surprised to know. Maybe there's a few people who have heard of Parker Ranch, but the fact that there is a vibrant cattle industry in Hawaii and Hawaiian Islands is probably news to a lot of people. How big is it?
We struggled for a long time because there wasn't harvest capacity to keep the animals here or keep the livestock here. Now, don't get me wrong. Livestock prices and cattle prices are soaring through the roof right now. So it is a lot better for our ranchers to grow them, to wean off stage and ship them to the mainland. Part of that problem and why that becomes better is there's less pressures on grass. There's not enough land available for them to keep them. So shipping them to the mainland makes it a lot easier. I don't know where those balloons just came from that were in my
we're celebrating having beef on Hawaiian Islands. That's what we got.
How that happened, but I just saw
a balloon. Oh my goodness. This is a celebration of you got skin in the game. All right, go ahead. I will interrupt you for a moment because, Bridget, I'm going to say it was 10 years ago because I used to spend a lot of time in Canada and particularly Alberta. And Alberta is the cattle feeding area of Canada. And I was shocked to learn that I went to a feed yard where cattle from the Parker Ranch were getting on a boat and coming to Canada and being fed, not coming to the United States. Yeah. That was like, why is this happening? So I'm happy to hear that you're keeping more of them on the islands and keeping them to feed the people locally.
Yes. So the company that I worked for and why I joined them was because we had an investor, obviously from the mainland, and owner, who helped wanting to see Hawaii become sustainable. And he invested heavily in two slaughter facilities within the state, one on the Big Island and one on Oahu. And I run the one that's on Oahu, to be able to increase the slaughter capacity for locals. He created a brand that's called Kama'aina Ranches. And that brand basically is the name of 172 ranches. 172 ranches produce beef through us, and we sell it to retail stores. And it gives people a sense of pride to say, hey, I'm a part of that brand, you know, and 172 ranchers, thank you for this, you know, thank you for buying. It gives them a sense of, hey, yes, I want to do this. There are more people that are interested in learning it and developing that good genetics and what is needed to produce a good quality animal and thrive. But we run into barriers constantly of land acquisitions. There's a lot of vacant land in places. Why don't you develop in those vacant lands that aren't usable for farm sales? You know, why don't you build houses there? Instead, they're buying houses on prime agriculture lots. And that's just, it's sickening to watch. I mean, this weekend I drove past an area that I grew up, and I hadn't driven down that road in probably, I don't know, 5 years. And to see the change that took place there, I was like, wow. I'm pointing out, going, look, there was a store there. Oh, and there was a little playground here. Oh, and there was a ranch here, and there was this. And it's completely changed. One of the things that I constantly state when I do tours and things with students that come to my plant is Kualoa Ranch's brand is 33. The significance of that brand of 33 is because they were the 33rd ranch when you drove from downtown Honolulu around that side of the island. Now, if you take that same route, that'll be the first ranch that you hit.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of brings things into perspective of, it like, does. Wow, 33 to 1. where did we go?
Yeah, I got to be honest, Bridget. You don't need balloons to create visuals. You do it well verbally.
Thank you.
We are in our final minute. What do you want us to most know about what's happening to you and to the Hawaiian citizens who want a local food supply?
I think the most important thing is just know there's this Democratic Republican Party. At this point, it doesn't even matter which one it is. Know who you vote for as an individual, what their values are, and what their intents are, and making sure that the right people are in the right place. And you as a person, step up for yourself, speak out. Don't follow the path that everybody is going. Don't be what I was for all those years of like, hey, it'll work itself out. No, you need to be able to speak up and say something. And you may not be liked, and it's going to be uncomfortable, but I promise you, good things did not come from a comfortable place.
I can't imagine you compliant in any way, shape, or form, Bridget Napier, but you are exactly what we need today. Thank you for taking the time. Most importantly, thank you for standing up for what is right and being a dutiful citizen and a great representation of Hawaii and the United States of America.
Thank you.
And when again are you coming to Nebraska?
I'm going to try to plan a summer trip this summer, all right. That's for sure.
We may not let you leave. Bridget Napier, setting the example on the Hawaiian Islands where people, I'm guessing, that, one final question, I got to go quickly. I'm guessing that's not corn-fed beef that you're serving at Hawaiian Meats. Yeah, it's Hawaiian grass at its finest. Thank you, Bridget. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. And Kristen Hicks Roof after this. And let's talk about Greg Hager and his music. He writes his own stuff. He inspires people one lyric at a time. And his Christian and country roots will keep this nation in boots. GregHager.com. Check him out online today. Welcome back, Roll Route, the program. We are into the third leg of the journey. Every journey should have four legs, right? Well, that's what critters have. Wait a minute. Are we critters? We only have two. Well, I've seen some stuff talking about us going back to all fours. I don't know what that's about. It has no relevance to the discussion that we're about to have as it involves pork. And joining us, representing the pork board, Kristen Hicks Roof. Actually, my favorite pastime, in which Kristen Hicks Roof I haven't talked about far too often lately, because I get distracted by all of the other noise going on, like disruption of property rights and all of these other issues. How are you today? And did you just tell me it's 100 degrees in Phoenix, Arizona?
Yes, it is nice and toasty out here, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. I love the heat. It's awesome. But yeah, excited to talk today about some nutrition and especially pork.
Kristen, when you can take a Hickman egg, which is also in Maricopa County, when you can take a Hickman Family Farm egg and cook it on the sidewalk in April, you need to move. You need to get out of there.
Think about the science experiment I'm teaching these kids. Who can do that in the world?
Hey, here's the positive side. You don't need a grill and a little can of propane. You can just take your pork chop out on the sidewalk and flip it over a couple times and you got it.
As long as you get to the 145, who cares how you cook it, right?
Oh my goodness. Are we going to stay that strict with these national? No, people, cook your pork chop to 178 and eat it. You'll be happier. Let it set for 6 minutes before you eat it. Don't let it rest.
No.
Oh my goodness, we just met. That's hard to believe. It's like I've known you forever.
Yeah, go with the flow.
So what do you do at the National Pork Board? First of all, let's do this, back up a step. What is the National Pork Board? What do you do with my checkoff dollar? That's the real question, Kristen.
That's a great question. So at the National Pork Board, we do research, education, and outreach and communications. And really, we work on behalf of all the farmers and producers out there who spend their day in and day out of making pork for the American people and worldwide. So a lot of what my role is at the National Pork Board, which is a commodity board, I manage all our human nutrition programs. So I'm the director of human nutrition. So I get to manage, what do we invest research dollars in to understand what's the role of pork in human health? And why do we want to convince people or show people that pork is that high quality protein for your plate or your bowl, perfect across the lifespan? And then I also help with our nutrition strategy and nutrition communications. So we work a lot. My counterpart, Emily Krause, works a lot on educating dietitians and other health professionals about pork and how it is a beneficial part of the plate.
What are the top three questions that the consumers want to know about pork?
Number one, is it healthy for me? And so we talk a lot about pork and its nutritional contributions, not only the high quality protein, but then all those micronutrients it delivers. So I'd say that's number one. Number two is it a red or white meat? The other white meat campaign was very
a disaster.
Successful.
It was a disaster. Just tell
the
truth.
It was very successful, though.
It was a disaster.
A lot of people remember it. And while it's a great thing to showcase the leanness, I guess you could say, it's also a challenge because pork is considered a red meat based on the myoglobin content from the USDA. And so it's really, how do we teach people about pork and whether it's a red or white meat? And I'd say the third thing is cooking temp, right? And we talked about it right at the beginning. A lot of people are used to going out and ordering pork and it's overcooked and it's dry and it's bland. And so how do we better educate anywhere from chefs to dietitians to people on cooking it right so they enjoy the experience of eating that flavorful protein?
See, you went right to why I have an angst with the other white meat campaign, because it wasn't simply that we overcooked the pork loin. We made it, number one, too lean. Number two, it did not have, because when you have a darker, like a red meat, you have a higher pH, better water holding capacity. So the consumer can screw it up cooking it and still have an insurance factor, kind of like marbling does. And by misinforming them, we have to start at ground zero and do it all over again and educate them how to cook it and how to select it.
It's a challenge. I mean, I am no meat scientist, I will tell you, so I can't talk too much on that nitty gritties. But there's pros and cons, right? The Dietary Guidelines for Americans recommends lean proteins. And so if pork did not meet that lean protein category, we would not be relevant in school meals, in food service operations. So there's a lot of benefits of that. But one of the things that I love about pork is you can still have the lean pork, but you can still have some more of the higher fat pork products that are great. Like I think about like a pork shoulder and a carnita. So there's still a lot of, I feel like pork is the best of both worlds. You got the lean and the non-lean, and let's embrace them all.
See, I thought I would set a trap. You would walk into it and you would stay there, but you climbed out of your own trap. Very good, Kristen. Your trap was that we all fall into this whole nonsense of lean beef, lean pork, trying to be like a chicken breast. Well, we don't want to be a chicken breast because chicken breast has to have some additive in order for it to have any taste. We now know that not just monounsaturated fat, but all fats are absolutely essential for healthy living. And we've been misled into believing that lean and lean meats are a good thing, when in fact we should have a moderate amount of fat in all things.
I think that's partially true. There's a mix of science out there, right, on the role of saturated fats in health. And so I think that is being disentangled to really understand more. Was it the saturated fats this whole time? I kind of see it as kind of like the egg and the egg yolk story that took, you know, decades to reverse the cholesterol reduction recommendation, which still gets talked about today. So I think the thing with nutrition science is it's constantly evolving. And that's why it's so hard to stay on top of it for many health professionals and talking with the average person, because it's always evolving and we're learning every day more. But to me, it's all about balance, variety, and moderation. You can eat all the foods that you want in moderation and have balance. And I think if we go back to those core constructs and we teach people that, embracing the foods they love, but then having moderate amounts, we can make a win for everyone. It just takes a lot of education and training and personal commitment to not be overeating. And I mean, that's a whole nother conversation.
And Dr. Hicks, Roop, this walks you right into what you were talking about earlier, because I remember the day I got on an airplane in Omaha, Nebraska, and I was flying to Houston. That's not relevant where I was going, other than you probably have a Texas tie too, so that might be relevant, but it's not
Aggie
in
ring.
The bigger. Yeah. We, of course, we see the Aggie ring, and most people don't understand the cult that represents, but that's okay. The 3.5 million Aggie alumni do. Anyway, so I'm sitting next to this guy who works for one of the big contractors to the school nutrition services. It's interesting you and I are having this discussion because as we speak, the USDA is coming out with another completely screwed up school nutrition program, keeping our kids on a path of starvation and depredation. That's not your question. My question for you is, I'm sitting next to this guy and he's going to Houston, which he says is their biggest client in the public school system, and they have to figure out how to modify their diets to meet the needs. And by the way, this was during the Obama administration. That's relevant because Michelle Obama made it really bad for kids in school nutrition. And he said, this nutrition thing is ever evolving, and we have to just continually update it and keep our schools on the right path. I said, my grandfather was born in 1918. He lived to be 88 years old, passed in 2006. Do you think nutrition is any different today than when he was a teenager? He looked at me and he said, well, you know, actually, nutrition probably wasn't any different. I said, no, nutrition hasn't been any different from day one. We continue to modify nutrition because the kids' lifestyles, their exercise, and everything else changes. And more importantly, we continue to have policymakers who think they know better how to manage the kids' health than the people who are actually feeding them. He said, you know, you got a good point. And I hope it changed him at least for a day. But we've allowed ourselves to walk into this whole situation here where we've put kids in peril. And I know that's out of your control because it's being done by the Health and Human Services and USDA Food Guide Pyramid people, which they don't call it that anymore. But that's really where we're at, Kristen.
You know, and that's the thing. Nutrition science is still a young science when you compare it to chemistry and biology and some of these more complex sciences. So I think give a little grace in the sense that it's learning and I feel like we're improving. But as you know, everyone eats, right? And everyone has a stake in the conversation, no pun intended. And so you have industry and commodities and food boards and all the people that want a piece of the game. And so I think that's where it gets a little challenging. And, you know, I don't do food policy because that's not in our domain.
That's not a checkoff funded deal, just so everybody knows. We're not confusing the two things here.
Right. But what we are doing is we are doing education to understand, or we're doing research to understand what is the role of pork in human health, especially in some of these younger kids. We have several research studies going on in infants and children. And I think as we can explore and provide data for how powerful pork is to these infants' growth, development, you know, labs like blood glucose and energy levels, then we can showcase and provide the data as to why we think pork should be on the menus and in people's diets, especially across the lifespan.
Director of Human Nutrition for the Pork Board, Kristen Hicks-Roof. The best kept secret in the pork. Well, we have two. We'll talk about two best kept secrets in the pork business in human nutrition. We'll get back with more after this. Well, in today's world, many people are talking about nitric oxide as a part of healthy living. But Dr. Nathan Bryan steps in here because how do we know the difference between one nitric oxide supplement and another one, Nathan?
Well, there's several things you look for. Is the people that are formulated or backing that product ever published a paper in the nitric oxide literature? Do they know anything about the basic enzymology and biochemistry of nitric oxide? Because here's what people do. Put a lot of ingredients in a bag or in a capsule and call it nitric oxide. You have to understand how the human body makes nitric oxide. You got to understand what goes wrong in people that can't make it. And then you got to provide product technology that actually fixes the reason you can't make nitric oxide. If you're low in testosterone, you don't give precursors or things because you've lost the ability to produce testosterone. What do? You actually give the actual molecules. Same thing with women with hormone replacement.
Full details and order the product at no2u.com. That's N-O, number two, letter U.com. Put Trent as your coupon code and I pay the shipping. Wait a minute, that's not good. Let's talk about Simpson Farm Enterprises. I know that a big chunk of the Great Plains of America got some much needed precipitation. That's giving farmers a chance to sit here today and say, hey, they got a tooth. Man, I'm here about 4 inches in some places. And the best part is it came really good. It didn't come as a gully washer. But let's stop and figure out where we're at. I realize if you don't have the machine now, you're probably not going to get it. But the Apache sprayers give you versatility, reliability, innovation, and most importantly, service beyond all others in the business. If you have not done business with Simpson Farm Enterprises from Hayes, Kansas, you just don't have a clue what service can be like. You call, You talk to somebody that's hands-on. That's what you need when you're in a time of need. SimpsonFarm.com. HighPlainsApache.com if you're north of Nebraska in the Great Plains of America. It's all about the Apache sprayer technology. Welcome back, Trent Loose. Trent on the Loose, PhD, Dr. Kristen Hicks Roof, my guest. During the break, did you find anybody that can brag about having high pH, high water holding capacity, darker pork chops?
Oh, that's too funny.
There's a guy, who raises Berkshire hogs in Arkansas. Oh, wait, he's in southern Missouri. He knows something about this.
I was like, you get a David Newman out there. He's a meat scientist. He'll tell you everything you need to know about the meat science of pork.
Just what we need is another meathead in the world. Can't wait for his phone call. Okay, I just feel the need to put you on the spot, Kristen. Is that okay?
Of course.
What are the two best kept secrets in the pork business, pork consumption as it relates to human nutrition?
I think number one is people need to know that pork can be good for you and good for your body, good for your health. When it comes to not only the high quality protein, which most pork cuts provide over 20 grams of protein per 3 ounce serving, which is a whopping number of protein. And many people are looking for more protein in their diet. But then it's a high quality protein. So it has all the essential amino acids to help with immune function, you know, growth and development. So that's number one. But then pork also provides some of these key micronutrients that I think we're just now exploring more of how these micronutrients help with health, whether it's cognitive function, aging, growth and development, mental status, whatever it might be, things like selenium and choline and zinc. Pork is a good or excellent source of all those nutrients. And so not only are you getting that protein, but you're getting all the nutrients with it. So it's all in packed one, and it tastes delicious. What's better than that?
Okay, so I'm not going to poo-poo either one of those because I think they're both very important and actually very true. The nutrient density of pork is incredible. And besides, you got bacon, 51% monounsaturated fat, same fat as olive oil. It's heart healthy fat, so don't leave bacon out of the equation. But everything you brought up is not a secret. People know that. You didn't come up with the two best secrets.
You know, but a lot of people, they don't know that. They think pork is unhealthy. It's not good for them. And we're really working to flip the script and show that pork can be that nutrient dense power protein. And it's those nutrients too. So I think those are some of the kind of uncertainties. And the second one is people like to eat their traditional foods, right? And pork fits across so many cultures, so many traditional foods. And I think we can embrace people eating the foods that they come from in their families. And let's talk about why we can continue that. And you don't have to go to this, you know, strict standard American diet that a lot of people feel like they're, you know, put in a box.
Yeah, we can't argue with any of that. But the number two food substance with available vitamin D, and thanks to COVID, now people have a better understanding of the importance of vitamin D. They understand that vitamin D is a precursor to, or no, the precursor for vitamin D is cholesterol. And if you don't have the right level of any of those ingredients, you're not going to function properly in any way, shape, or form, in particular, your immune system. And so vitamin D must be fed properly. And the best source from a pig of vitamin D is lard. And last week, Kristen, I saw the first major news story about the positive benefits, health benefits of lard that I've seen in a long time. It's coming back. Finally, true health is coming back.
You know, that's a point though, Trent, and it goes back to those traditional foods, right? Many of these cultural foods have been around for hundreds of years, and we're steering away from that, going into more processed, easily packaged, easily readily accessible foods. And I think when we go back to what is the wholesome food choice that we've been raising for hundreds of years, those pigs are an excellent source of nutrition. And let's go back to that single ingredient product versus some of these other ingredients products that we're finding in the store with this massive list of ingredients.
And the other food item from pork that gets overlooked all the time, pork burger. people don't know, you can take ground pork, just like ground beef, and make every single possible thing that ground beef makes. It is the unsung hero of the pig world.
I agree. You know, and our retail team at the National Pork Board is working really hard to communicate the benefits of ground pork, but then also the versatility of ground pork. So definitely agree with you. I'm going to put on my registered dietitian hat and talk for those of you who are maybe ground beef eaters and you're not familiar with ground pork. A easy transition is do a 50-50 blend as you get more accustomed to some of that pork flavor. And some of our early research that's coming out at Penn State is actually showing that people are preferring a 50-50 blend versus 100% either way. So it's a good way to introduce yourself. Plus, we know pork is a value protein. So it's a great way to save a buck, have a high nutrition, and it still tastes delicious. Win-win all across the board.
I know this really isn't your bailiwick because you're the nutrition person instead of the economics person, but this does play into what you've been dealing with, obviously, for the past year. Because if you go into any grocery store USA today, in most cases where I've walked in, Kristen, you have seen pork cheaper than chicken. And it's changed a bit in the last 30 days. But when you can buy whole pork loins day after day for less than $2 a pound, I don't think people realize the value of the nutrient density you're getting. Because when you get a pork loin, you're pretty much 80% something to consume nutrition instead of a high percentage of bone or fat or whatever the case may be. I mean, I'm talking about excessive external fat. But it has been the value that is overlooked far too often.
Honestly, Trent, a lot of it is because pork just hasn't resonated with many consumers. And that's one of the things that we're also doing at the National Pork Board. We have a really big initiative, a consumer segmentation campaign to really understand pork consumers. What do they know? What do they not know? And how can we best educate them and support them? Because like you said, I mean, if you're looking to feed a family, pork is an excellent choice. Not only are oftentimes the products larger in size, so it's perfect for a larger family event, but it can also pack that nutrition that we really want to share that message for our division.
Kristen, one other thing that might be a tougher question just because of the times we're in. I know that the Pork Board through the past 20 years has spent a considerable amount of time studying Hispanic nutritional trends and dietary patterns. And the folks who come and join the United States from south of the border, particularly Mexico, are excellent pork consumers. Some of the other folks that are coming across this border in droves bring about an anti-pork sentiment. Do you feel that that has any impact in what's going on with the demand of pork today from a human nutrition standpoint?
I don't know. I mean, I think you're always going to have religious or personal reasons that people aren't going to consume pork. And that's not our target audience, right? But there's a lot of meat consumers out there and pork consumers out there. And so really it's how do we showcase pork to all those meat consumers out there? Because I think those are the people who are willing and they want to try new meats, whether it's, you know, grills, ribs on the grill or whatever it might be. And so if we can expose them to the different cuts of pork, I think that's really where the win is. I think you have to respect people's tradition and religious foods. And yeah, I don't think that's a priority.
And if you go back to 1940 in the United States and you look at the per capita consumption of pork, beef has been higher. Beef was the king until 1977, 78. It fell. Chicken has become the plus 100 pounds per person. Pork has stayed at 55 to 60 pounds forever. It doesn't go below that. It doesn't go above that. It's just steady. What does it take to push that to the next level?
I mean, if you're going to ask me, this is my opinion, right? I would say,
do you have somebody there else that I can ask in case I'm tired of asking you questions?
No. So I would say we really need to educate healthcare professionals, people who work with everyday consumers. So whether that's retail dietitians or physicians in the offices, teach them about pork, because a lot of what they're hearing is avoid red meats, limit red meats. And that's the science is finally starting to tease this story out. I mean, decades long coming. So I think it'll change over the next few years, but educating those people will really help then downstream that people won't be so fearful of red meats, including pork. So I think that's a big, and then part of it is just trying and having a good experience. So for all those listeners, if you've tried pork and it's been an overcooked pork chop, give it another shot. Cook it to 145 with a 3-minute rest. And once you taste that flavor, telling you, you're going to go back.
And you might also want to seek out a really dark, rich, red Boston butt. And don't worry about being caught a butt, because it's actually from the shoulder, and you'll be extremely happy with your choice. Kristen, you're a blast.
So good.
Thanks for representing pork producers so well.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and good luck, everyone. Try some pork.
You think maybe we could do this again?
Oh, definitely. I love talking about nutrition and pork. It's fun.
One more important thing. Would you tell your father thank you for his service?
Of course. Of course. Definitely will. And tell your daughter, Giggum.
Oh, of course. We had to get that in there from the ag and the military mechanics side of Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a good place to be able to talk about some of these things. And then, you know, we have to say thank you and give tribute to those that enable it to happen. Just can't say enough about the military veterans and the families who've been a part of that for so many years. Thank you again, Kristen Hicks Roof. We've successfully journeyed down the path connecting food producers to food consumers. For Kristen and for Bridget, I'm Trent Luce on a Red Shirt Friday. What have you done to say thank you? Just as before I close out completely, you know, it was in Texas that retired four-star General Jimmy Williams, United States Marine Corps, when I was talking about saying thank you to the veterans, he said, you know, you can give lip service all you want, Mr. Luce, but if you really want to say thank you, you'll exercise the rights that these kids protect for you. Are you exercising your rights? Are you saying thank you in the proper way? That's really the question of the day. Roll out. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again Monday with Hank Vogler. Once again, we're talking about the National Western. Celebrate the history and the heritage of food and energy production. And this 2024 year was the perfect start in bringing the consumers and the producers, the overall concept of rural route, to the forefront. Bringing the people who produce the food to the people who... We had people at the Beef and Wine Festival in the yards who came from Chicago and San Francisco. They tied it into their entire meeting. And we had a wine purveyor, Farm Country Wines from Texas, that came. We made 2024 big thanks to you and your support. We're going to make 2025 even bigger. Full details about the schedule and the history and the heritage that we are celebrating can be found and kept track of on the web, nationalwestern.com. It's all about Colorado on display for all of us.